So let's cultivate our motivation. So it's a very simple statement with a lot of meaning. When we say that everybody wants happiness, but in our ignorance, we create the cause of suffering. So it's good to think about that in terms of ourself. It helps to reduce our arrogance. Helps to motivate us to be free from samsara and to be more careful about our actions and words and thoughts. And it can also create a feeling of sorrow or compassion for ourselves. Knowing that we want happiness, but being under the control of afflictions and karma, we create the cause of suffering. And so some love, wishing ourselves to be happy, and compassion, wishing ourselves to be free of misery, that can arise in response to seeing our situation like this. But together with the compassion for ourselves comes a determination to do something about the situation, because we're the ones who can change it and create the causes of happiness. So we gain a determination to do that. Then we look around and we see that everybody else is in the same situation. Friends and relatives, strangers, people we don't like. Everybody wanting happiness, overwhelmed by their afflictions and karma, creating the causes for more misery. And so think about that and let love and compassion arise for these people. Even if they're people that you usually don't like, look beyond your not liking them to really see the situation they're in. How they're trapped in samsara. And so let your mind dwell on that sense of love and compassion for them, and make a strong determination not to let the mind arise that picks at other people's faults. Because all of that is so superficial compared to the situation that all of us are in. So let's not waste our time getting irritated or aggravated or furious about stuff that, in the big scheme of things, is actually quite inconsequential. And instead generate a strong determination to become a Buddha in order to free yourself and all others from this situation. Okay, so you had some homework to do. Venerable Dhamsa was the first one. Just send it in. Okay. So I thought that it would be very good if she read her homework out or played it out so that you can see how it really works when you debate. And you do both roles?
Or do you want to be my mother? Huh? Would you like to be my mother?
Do you want me to be? Okay.
Would it help to put it up? Or we'll just read it.
We'll just read it.
It's quite straightforward.
Okay.
So the first set are responses to why, in which the defender asserts a false pervasion. So I'm the challenger, and my mother, being read by Venerable Children, is the defender. So this is something I often say to my mom. I'm not fluent in Chinese, but that doesn't mean I'm not Chinese.
Why?
So it follows that whoever isn't fluent in Chinese is necessarily not Chinese.
I accept.
Okay, so then... Option one, you can show the absurd consequence of the false pervasion, right? Because she's accepted that whoever isn't fluent in Chinese is necessarily not Chinese. Okay, so I tell her, it follows that my grandmother is not Chinese.
Why?
Because she is not fluent in Chinese. She mainly speaks Hainanese. You asserted the pervasion.
Get out of my house.
Yes. That's what my mother would say. Okay, so that didn't go very well. So we have option two. You can give a reason to justify the correct pervasion, right? So I would tell my mom, it follows that I'm not fluent in Chinese, but that doesn't mean I'm not Chinese, because I am the child of two ethnically Chinese parents.
Well, if you're not fluent in Chinese, you're not my child.
Okay, so that also didn't go very well. She would definitely say that. So now you still have option three. You can ask the defender to give a reason from their side to justify the false pervasion. So I asked my mom, give a reason justifying why whoever isn't fluent in Chinese is necessarily not Chinese.
Because they don't understand Chinese language, history, and culture.
Okay. So now we can move on, right? So these are some responses to if, you know, when the person says the reason is not established. Okay, so I'll go back to my mom and say, so it follows that you must understand Chinese language, history, and culture to be Chinese.
I accept.
It follows that a Caucasian professor of Chinese studies is Chinese.
Why?
Because they understand Chinese language, history, and culture. You asserted the pervasion.
The reason is not established.
Okay, so the first thing you can do is you can get the defender to justify their answer, right? So it follows that a Caucasian professor of Chinese studies doesn't understand Chinese language, history, and culture.
I accept.
Give a reason why a Caucasian professor of Chinese studies doesn't understand Chinese language, history, and culture.
Because they aren't Chinese.
Okay, so that's circular argument with my mom. So, or I can give a reason to justify the earlier reason. Yeah, why I think a Caucasian professor, so I would say it follows a Caucasian professor of Chinese studies does understand Chinese language, history, and culture because they have to study these subjects in detail for many years and they do field work in China.
There's no pervasion.
Okay. So now you can justify why you put forward that pervasion. Yeah, so I would tell my mom, it follows that whoever studies Chinese language, history, and culture in detail for many years and does fieldwork in China understands Chinese language, history, and culture because that person has theoretical knowledge and lived experience of Chinese language, history, and culture.
You're wrong.
Okay. All right. So you can also get the defender to justify their answer. So it follows that it is not the case that whoever studies Chinese language, history, and culture in detail for many years and does fieldwork in China understands Chinese history and culture.
I accept.
So, okay, posit someone who has studied Chinese language, history, and culture in detail for many years and done fieldwork in China but does not understand Chinese history and culture.
You think you're so clever. Go and do your Chinese homework.
So that's usually how the debate would end. Like that.
And then your conclusion.
Oh, an unfortunate one, but it's the truth. Where I decided, well, so what's the point of studying Chinese language, history, and culture in detail for many years and going to live in China if that doesn't make me Chinese? So I'm going to learn French, which I did.
Okay, now it's the debate between her and her father.
This one, no conclusion, but this actually happened, just that I didn't get my response in. So, okay, Venerable will read for my father. So I said to him, as a Buddhist monastic, I will be of service to society.
Why?
It follows that Buddhist monastics are not of service to society.
I accept.
Give a reason to justify that Buddhist monastics are not of service to society.
Because they don't work and they live off others' earnings.
It follows that people who don't work and live off others' earnings are not of service to society.
I accept.
It follows that your mother is not of service to society.
Why?
Because she doesn't work and lives off others' earnings. You asserted the pervasion.
The reason is not established.
Your mother doesn't work and lives off others' earnings because she is a housewife.
No pervasion.
Posit someone who is a housewife, who does work and doesn't live off others' earnings.
Hillary Clinton. No, that's not what her father said.
Yikes. She does work.
Her father said there are housewives who help their husbands with their businesses. For example, your grandmother. Also, they do all the housework and care for their children, which is work. So Hillary Clinton. She just doesn't get paid for it.
So it follows that there are forms of unsalaried work that are of service to society.
I accept.
It follows that Buddhist monastics do unsalaried work that is of service to society.
Why?
It follows that Buddhist monastics do unsalaried work that is of service to society because they offer teachings on how to work with the mind for free. They offer spiritual counseling and prayers. They do charity work. They maintain monasteries where people can practice their spiritual beliefs in harmony.
The reason is not established.
Okay, give a reason to justify that Buddhist monastics do not do all the things I have just listed above.
Because Buddhist monastics are running away from society and want to live an easy life. For example, Tibet is a backward country because 25% of the male population is ordained.
This is a fact. He actually told me this. So it follows that a country is backward because it has a large monastic population that just wants to live an easy life.
I accept.
It follows that Taiwan is backwards.
Why?
Because it has a large monastic population that just wants to live an easy life. You asserted the pervasion.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I got tired after this.
Yeah? Okay. Now, who did their homework? Or what we can do, why don't we, because we have five situations, why don't we just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then everybody reads off their example.
So this was the one after the defender says why, and there were two ways to handle that. Yep. So it started with the defender saying, I accept that whatever is a hidden phenomena is necessarily a specifically characterized phenomena. And the challenger says, then it follows that the subject, the emptiness of this cup, is a specifically characterized phenomena. And the defender says, why? Meaning, why is the emptiness of the cup a specifically characterized phenomena? And then the challenger says, because of being a hidden phenomena, you asserted the pervasion that whatever is a hidden phenomena is necessarily a specifically characterized phenomena. And the emptiness of the cup is a hidden phenomena. That's one. And the other way it could be handled is, it starts with the challenger this time. It follows that the subject, the emptiness of this cup, is a specifically characterized phenomena. And the defender says, why? And then the challenger says, then it follows that the emptiness of the cup is not a specifically characterized phenomena. I accept that the emptiness of the cup is not a specifically characterized phenomenon. And then the challenger says, give a reason justifying that the emptiness of the cup is not a specifically characterized phenomenon.
Okay, so why isn't the emptiness of the cup?
I think I screwed up that last part. Go ahead.
So why is the emptiness of the cup a specifically characterized phenomenon?
The emptiness of the cup is a permanent phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I kind of screwed this up. It's a hidden phenomena.
Hmm?
It's in Sautantrika, it's not a specifically characterized phenomenon.
Why not?
Because it's impermanent. I mean, things that are impermanent are specifically characterized. Emptiness is not impermanent, it's permanent.
Right.
But I might have written this wrong. I think I missed something.
I think it's okay. Yeah, but then what about being a hidden phenomena? What does being a hidden phenomena encompass?
It encompasses both impermanent and permanent phenomena because it encompasses all existence.
Okay, so a cup is a hidden phenomena?
A cup is, and so is the emptiness of the cup.
Okay.
But I think I might have written the second one wrong. It just doesn't seem okay. Right to me. But anyway, I'll look at it again.
No, you're accepting that the emptiness of the cup is not a specifically characterized phenomena. It's not. Give a reason.
Give a reason. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because
yeah,
it's
right.
a...
Just my mind flipped it yeah, for some reason.
Because it's a generally characterized phenomena. Because it's permanent.
D, the subject, in just the way Manjushri debated, it follows that the Abbey's Buddha Hall is a manifest phenomenon. The defender says, why? Challenger, spell out your why. Defender, why is the Abbey's Buddha Hall a manifest phenomenon? Challenger, oh, so it follows that the Abbey's Buddha Hall is not a manifest phenomenon. Defender, I accept it. Challenger, give a reason justifying that the subject, the Abbey's Buddha Hall, is not a manifest phenomenon. Defender, the Abbey's Buddha Hall is not a manifest phenomenon because it is non-existent.
Mm. Okay, stop there for a minute. Okay, so is that correct?
No, it's definitely not correct. It's intentionally not correct.
Okay, so you're going to disprove it.
Yeah.
What part of it isn't correct?
Huh?
What part of it isn't correct?
that Booty Hall is a non-existent because it's a manifest phenomenon. That's not correct.
Say that again.
Abhi's Buddha Hall is not a manifest phenomenon because it is non-existent, is what the defender said.
Right.
But just because something is non-existent does not make it a manifest phenomenon to begin with, right? So this the defender is giving a wrong answer.
Okay, so what's the wrong answer?
The wrong answer is the Abhi's Buddha Hall is not a manifest phenomenon because it is a non-existent.
So what part is wrong with that?
It follows that the Abhi's Buddha Hall is an existent phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Where is it?
Why is the subject, the Abhi's Buddha Hall, an existent phenomenon? It follows that the subject, the Abhi's Buddha Hall, is an existent phenomenon because it is a future phenomenon.
Okay.
Okay. The reason is not established. Also wrong. Then it follows that the subject, the Abhi's Buddha Hall, does not exist because it is a future phenomenon. The defender says, I accept. Mm-hmm. The challenger says, it follows that tomorrow's lunch does not exist. The defender says, why do you say tomorrow's lunch does not exist? Challenger, it follows that tomorrow's lunch does not exist because it is a future phenomenon. Defender, there is no pervasion. Then it follows that tomorrow's lunch does exist. I accept. Give the reason why you accept that tomorrow's lunch exists. The subject, tomorrow's lunch exists because the causes for tomorrow's lunch exist. Challenger, then it follows that the Abhi's Buddha Hall exists. Why do you say that the Abhi's Buddha Hall exists? It follows that the subject, the Abhi's Buddha Hall exists because it is a future phenomenon whose causes exist. You asserted the pervasion. Okay.
So then you are a Buddha.
Because why?
Why?
Because the causes for your Buddhahood exist. The substantial cause for your Buddhahood exists.
Doesn't Satrantika hold that the future phenomenon is a permanent phenomenon that exists?
They say it's permanent. Yeah. But for them, that means it's not manifest.
No, we're not proving. We didn't finish the manifest. I got screwed up. But it does exist, I think, in Satrantika.
They say it's permanent.
Permanent.
But you've been talking about it there as if it exists. I mean, as if it's manifest.
That was the original thing, that it manifests. But we didn't get back to that argument.
Hmm.
What the defender took us off on was that it doesn't exist at all. And so the challenger was coming back to, it does exist. It exists as a permanent phenomenon.
No, you said it exists as a future phenomenon.
Yes, a future phenomenon.
Yeah.
There's quite a difference between saying the future, that the Abhi's future Buddha Hall exists and saying the Abhi's Buddha Hall exists. The Abhi's Buddha Hall does not exist. The future Buddha Hall exists,
mm-hmm.
according to this system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to be stated that way.
Yeah, and the same way for the Prasangikas. The future Buddha Hall exists. You can't say the present Buddha Hall exists. If the present Buddha Hall existed, then there would be no need to build it. That sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah. Because if something has already attained its own entity, then there's no reason for a cause to produce it. Because it's already attained its own entity, it already exists. So you can't say that the Abhi's Buddha Hall is a manifest phenomenon. We did try and prove what? Existent phenomena.
Phenomenon.
Yeah. It's a past phenomena. It's a future
phenomenon. It's a future phenomenon.
Yeah,
it's a future phenomenon. And a future phenomenon is what I was trying to prove is an existent. But I get that that's
off.
The future Buddha Hall exists. Okay. But the Buddha Hall doesn't exist. Okay. But then you gave a reason there that the future Buddha Hall exists because the causes for the Buddha Hall exist. I don't know if Satantrika would say that. Prasangikas would say that. But I don't know if Satantrikas would agree. Yeah. I don't know. We can argue according to Prasangika.
Yeah, anyway, I have various versions of this, but this was way harder than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's as much of the Buddha Hall as I got.
Okay.
It seems like if all the causes and conditions existed for something to exist, it wouldn't be a future phenomena, it would be a present phenomena.
Yes.
So the substantial cause may exist, but not all the causes and conditions come together.
Right.
So
yeah, it's better. Everybody send your things to Venerable Dhamma.
It's not very interesting, and I was working with 10% of my mind yesterday. So okay, so the challenger starts off with the emptiness of the cup is permanent because it is eternal. And the defender says, I accept that the emptiness of the cup is permanent because it is eternal. And the challenger says, then it follows that the subject, the emptiness of Gotami House, is permanent because it is eternal. And the defender says, why is the emptiness of Gotami House permanent by the reason of being eternal? And the challenger says, because the emptiness of Gotami House is eternal, you asserted the pervasion. And the defender says, there is no pervasion. It is not the case that whatever is eternal is necessarily permanent. And the challenger says, it follows that it is not the case that whatever is eternal is necessarily permanent. The defender says, I accept that it is not the case that whatever is eternal is necessarily permanent. The challenger says, it follows that the lack of pervasion does not exist. If it exists, posit something that is eternal and not permanent. The subject, the emptiness of the building Gotami House, is not eternal because when the building ceases, the emptiness of Gotami House ceases.
Usually, check if the reason fits the applies to the subject before you check the pervasion. Did we do that? Yeah, they already accepted it. Yeah, that the emptiness of the cup is eternal. But, so we're jumping in the middle of the debate. Normally, you would check, or if somebody made a statement like that, then the first no pervasion to the first thing when you say the emptiness of the cup is not pervasion. The reason isn't established because you would debate first whether the emptiness of the cup is eternal or not. Yeah, do you get what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, that's what you would do first. Here, it's like we're stepping in the middle of it. Yeah, but if we were at the beginning, then that's the first thing that you would check. Is the reason established?
So one example for after the defender says there's no pervasion, it follows that the subject climate change does not exist because weather patterns are showing more extremes. The defender, there's no pervasion, that is, it is not the case that whenever weather patterns are showing more extremes, then there's necessarily climate change. Challenger, it follows that climate change does exist because it fits the definition of climate change. And then you give the definition. Climate change is a change in statistical distribution of weather patterns, then when that change lasts for an extended period of time, for example, decades to millions of years, and so forth. You can read, climate change may refer to change in average weather conditions or in the time variation of weather around long-term average conditions.
Okay, so you're saying that climate change does exist, but does that prove that climate change exists here on this earth? What about the syllogism proves that it exists here on this earth? Because the way it's written, it's just proving that it exists in general. Yeah. And I'm sure President Trump would say, oh, yes, climate change exists on Mars. Yeah. Or on a planet, circling that star way out there. I think she needs to make the subject a little tighter. You know, the climate change exists. Climate change on this earth at this time. Yeah? That's what you meant, but it's not said. And so, people can say, well, yeah, climate change exists, but not here.
The reason's not established. Defender, I accept that whoever has black friends is necessarily free of all racial bias. This is often what people say. I have black friends, I can't be racially biased. Mm-hmm. Challenger, it follows that whoever has black friends is necessarily free of all racial bias. Defender, I accept. Challenger, then it would follow that the subject, Robin DiAngelo, who wrote White Fragility, is free of all racial bias, even though she says she is racially biased simply by being born into a society in which racism is embedded. Why? Because she has black friends, you asserted the pervasion. That reason, that Robin DiAngelo has black friends, is not established. It follows that the subject, Robin DiAngelo, has black friends because she socializes with black people.
Okay. Now, look at that. Look, let's make a thing of someone who is born into a society in which racism is embedded is necessarily racially biased.
I accept. This is her premise. This is a...
Yeah, yeah. That's okay. Her premise.
You
but it would be...
That.
Let's question that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So why? Why is somebody in... Why is somebody who's born into a society in which racism is embedded... necessarily racist.
Racially biased.
Racially biased.
Actually, she would say racist, but that's too strong for my liking.
Uh-huh.
So racially biased. Because we're deeply conditioned to accept the paradigm of white superiority.
Okay. So whoever is born into a society is biased, is necessary, because we're deep. Okay, so a Chinese person born in Singapore is necessarily racially biased because they're deeply conditioned to accept the paradigm of white superiority.
Well, okay, if we're going to apply it.
Yeah. No, white superiority?
Yes.
No, in Singapore, it's Chinese superiority.
But in some areas, white people are just seen as superior, like... I don't know. I was in the humanities program run by only British tutors. Or the vice president was promoting a policy of getting native English speakers to teach English, mm-hmm. because the locals are not qualified.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
Well, yeah, but that has nothing to
do with white superiority.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just they speak better English. But, you know, if you live in a Chinese society... White superiority is out the window. Yeah. No, it. Because the racist comments I hear in Singapore are against the Malays. And I hear that from the Chinese.
Yeah, that may be so. But a Singaporean that I was with, spent a little time with in Singapore, talked to me about how it's true that when like Americans or British people come to Singapore, mm-hmm. the Chinese people that they're in relationship with do not speak up because they feel intimidated about the fact that they don't speak English as well as the English speakers, and that to me is a white white superiority view. She said it's very common. This person, not somebody that was involved with us. So
I haven't really encountered that. So everybody is saying that white superiority produces racism, even if there's no white people living in the country.
It depends on the society. Yeah.
Yes, that's the point.
It is post-colonial.
But some people who are post-colonial hate white people
for being superior.
No, they hate because of the colonialism, you know, but not because they think white people are superior.
You're suggesting that this should be tightened up to, like, narrow it down to just in America?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you may have to narrow it to different places in America, you know? So you're saying everybody who's deeply conditioned to accept the paradigm of white superiority is necessarily racially biased, okay? But is everybody in the society deeply conditioned to accept the paradigm of white superiority?
I'm playing with reading, in reading this book, I'm playing with this idea, mm-hmm. because she makes the point that children as young as 2 or 3 already recognize or can be tested to recognize that being white is preferred.
I think it's older than that, from what I've read. Not 2 or 3, maybe 4.
Her research is that young.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not an expert in this area yet, but I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
So, rather than... Can we talk about it from the terms of the example as a debate and not... And not as a social, you know, not debating the social, but using it as an example for a debate topic,
right?
Which is what it was presented as.
Yeah.
If you want to make it stand up, well, you might be able to change white to a specific group's superiority. Instead of it saying a paradigm of white superiority, it could say a specific group's superiority. Supposed mm-hmm. superiority. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't put racial because that indicates that you believe that there is that race is a valid grouping. Just a specific group's supposed racial superiority, maybe. The specific group's supposed racial superiority.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's not necessarily just white, like the Chinese may have mm-hmm. that in their paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be very interesting, this kind of thing, to go back and define the terms to make sure that we all understand what does racism mean? What does racially biased mean? What is does the paradigm of a specific group's supposed racial superiority mean? Yeah, if to tighten it up, because we can talk about this in general and maybe agree on the words, but whether we're really agreeing on the meaning we don't know if we haven't defined what the words are, what the words themselves mean.
Yeah, and I suspect if I had the time and the wherewithal to really study her book, that there would be very specific understandings of these terms. I just don't have them at my fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose this one is because when white people start having this conversation about talking about racial differences and the situation as it is in America today, often white people get very defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they'll say, because there's this equation, now we're getting into the content, but there's this equation between racism means that you're like a Ku Klux Klan member. And so we make the assumption that if we're not a member of the KKK, that we're not racially biased, or if we have black friends, we're not racially biased. And that's simply not true.
Yeah, it would be interesting. But the way that's worrying is also that black people are racially biased. Everybody, according to that statement, everybody is racially biased. What? Yeah, even dogs and cats and grasshoppers. No, but everybody, the way it's worded, is racially biased.
Grasshoppers not born into the society we're talking about. But what she's talking about with a black person at 3 years old recognizing this racial bias of society means that they also are having a racial bias. They're accepting a racial bias.
Mm-hmm.
So, but because they are deeply conditioned. But also, Jesse Jackson has black friends, and he has showed racial bias in some of his statements.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I think sometimes in these things there's the assumption that minority people are never racially biased. And I know from growing up in a minority culture that is not true. Yeah.
Stated by the former Detroit mayor Coleman Young, who was a black man, that he was called a racist. And he said that he couldn't be racist because he was called prejudice. And he said he couldn't be prejudiced because he was black.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, that's a prejudice statement.
Yeah. I'm afraid I bombed the homework. I didn't understand the homework really well. But I did send something to Venerable Damchu. It's probably the most complete because I only did one version of everyone. I didn't do the other second option. So this one says, a defender, I accept that a being with a desire realm body is necessarily an ordinary being. So the challenger says, it follows that a being with a desire realm body is necessarily an ordinary being. The defender says, I accept it. Challenger, then it would follow that the subject, an arhat with remainder, would necessarily be an ordinary being. And why? Because of having a desire realm body, you asserted deprivation. The reason is not established, says the defender. And the challenger says, it follows that the subject, a being with a desire realm body, is not necessarily an ordinary being. The second option is...
Wait a minute, that last sentence...
It follows.
The reason is not established.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is it that you're trying to establish? That
I'm trying to establish, or the challenger is trying to establish that a being with a desire realm body is not necessarily an ordinary being. That's the.
No.
Yeah. So it says. Then it would follow that the subject, an arhat with remainder, would necessarily be an ordinary being. And so the defender says, why? The challenger explains, because of having a desire realm body.
Right.
You asserted the privation.
Okay, so the privation was what?
The privation was that a being with a desire realm body is necessarily an ordinary being. Okay. That's the pervasion.
Right. And that's...
That's the wrong right. pervasion.
That's the wrong pervasion. Then why does the next one say the reason is not established?
It says, because the reason was... because of being that the reason was that the arhat was necessarily an ordinary being because of having a desire realm body, so that because of having a desire realm body, that reason is not established. Or the arhat with the remainder.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the reason is established. Because the arhat with remainder does have a desire realm body.
No, but the defender who is wrong says the reason is not established.
Right.
And so the challenger corrects that and says, corrects that by saying it follows that the subject of being with a desire realm body is not necessarily an ordinary being.
Okay.
Yeah, but what you need to reply is, the challenger just repeats back what that means, right? So the challenger would say, it follows that an arhat with remainder does not have a desire realm body.
Ah, okay.
Then you would say, I accept. Then we would start debating. Oh, really? He doesn't have a desire realm body? I mean, whatever. Yeah.
Okay, so I started it with the wrong...
No, I mean the last...
No, the beginning is fine.
Everything makes sense until... Because now you got to start debating the reason, right? Because the defender is saying the arhat doesn't have a desire realm body.
Mm-hmm.
Then as the challenger, you need to rectify that.
To show that the arhat does have a desire realm body.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, if you say that the reason is not established, then...
Yeah, that's what the defender said. So I was trying to correct the defender, but I guess I didn't correct it in the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's good. That's a good.
I have a funny one.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So I didn't send it to her, so I'm going to read it. It's about I accept it. And I was trying to be.
What's CE?
Cyclic existence.
What? Oh, cyclic existence. Okay.
So I have a funny one, which I didn't send to her, but I was trying to be funny.
Yeah.
So it follows that the subject, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, are a hidden phenomena because of being a conventional truth. And the defender says, I accept. And then the challenger says, it follows that the subject, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, are a non-existent phenomena because they are not an object of an awareness. And then the defender says, I accept. And the challenger says, sha! It follows that the subject, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, are a non-existent.
Okay, so challenger, it follows that mental qualities such as compassion can be developed limitlessly. Defender, why? Challenger, then it follows that mental qualities such as compassion cannot be developed limitlessly. Defender, I accept it. Challenger, give a reason justifying why mental qualities such as compassion cannot be developed limitlessly. Defender, mental qualities such as compassion cannot transcend their limited natures and increase limitlessly, just as the length that one can jump cannot increase limitlessly, and how through boiling water it cannot eventually ignite. Challenger, so it follows that mental qualities such as compassion cannot increase limitlessly because they cannot transcend their limited natures, like the physical limitations of jumping and the boiling of water. Defender, I accept it.
Okay, what's wrong?
The mind doesn't have physical limitations in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the debate continues, but now we go... into no pervasion. Challenger, it follows that mental qualities such as compassion can increase limitlessly because they have the stable basis of the mind. Defender, there is no pervasion, that whatever has the stable basis of the mind can increase limitlessly. Challenger, so it follows that it's not the case that whatever has the stable basis of the mind can increase limitlessly. Defender, I accept it. Challenger, it follows that the lack of pervasion does not exist. If it exists, posit something that has a stable basis of the mind and cannot develop limitlessly. Defender, the subject, anger. Challenger, give a reason why anger can be developed limitlessly.
Maybe let's look at that a little bit more slowly.
Okay.
Okay.
That should be.
So let's, because it's going pretty fast. Okay. So let's, it follows is, let's look at, start from the beginning. Okay. It follows that the mental qualities such as compassion can be developed limitlessly. Why? Meaning no. Then it follows that they can't be developed limitlessly. I accept it. Okay. Give a reason justifying why mental qualities such as compassion cannot be developed limitlessly. Okay. And the reason is because
they can't transcend their limited natures and increase limitlessly, just like one can't jump.
Okay, so they can't.
I'm giving the reason is give a reason, and the whole thing is a reason with including an illustration. So predicate the mental the subject mental qualities such as compassion, thesis cannot be developed limitlessly. Reason, because they cannot transcend their limited natures and increase limitlessly, and then example.
Okay, so then you have to, if somebody says, what in the world do you mean by transcend their limited nature? Mm. What does that mean? Mm. So then what are you going to say?
Cannot transcend the physical limitations.
But talking about compassion having physical limitations is irrelevant.
Yes, that's why it's wrong.
Oh, so then anything that doesn't have physical limitations can increase limitlessly.
No, I didn't assert that pervasion.
No, but you're saying, No, you were saying that if it can't transcend its limited nature. Mm-hmm. Its limited physical nature, mm-hmm. Then it can't develop limitlessly. And I said, that's irrelevant to what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because we're talking about compassion. Mm-hmm. And then you said...
Yeah, I was just following the layout in... the prominent text. So just using the reason that we're going to refute. So I don't necessarily agree with this reason. I'm just using the one that was in the text. Yeah.
But somebody is, when you're in debating, if you're debating and you use a term and somebody says, what in the world do you mean by that? Mm. You have to stop and define your term.
And I think they would, from what I got from that, they were defining the term of limited nature as in the physical limitations. And so they are seeming to attribute a physical quality to the mind that's not there. And then it does have the absurd consequence that you're saying.
You're just talking about physical things and saying they can't increase limitlessly, but, because they can't transcend their physical nature. But that's great for physical things, but we're talking about compassion.
I know. That's the point of this. Yeah, that's the whole point. I'm the defender's wrong. That's the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but later on she's using because it is meant to has the basis of mental a stable basis of the mind. Okay. And then she puts in anger. Yeah, I mean, a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then if I say, okay, anger can increase limitlessly because it has a stable basis of the mind, then what does stable basis of the mind mean? What does that mean? Because we're following the outline here. But if you use words that nobody understands, then you have to stop and define your words. Okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah. qualities such as compassion can increase limitless because they have the stable basis of the mind. So I'm saying, what do you mean by stable basis of the mind? Then?
Where one moment, what previous moment of cultivation of that factor causes an increase of the next moment.
Okay, so then anger has a stable basis of the mind.
This is a qualm that I came
then
to.
Then anger can increase limitlessly. Then anger you can never get rid of.
No, because it has an antidote.
So can it increase limitlessly?
Can anger have all sentient beings as its object?
Answer my question. Anger increase limitlessly?
If we take limitlessly to mean, like, if we say compassion can increase limitlessly in terms of it can have, compassion can have all sentient beings, limitless sentient beings as its object, and that is how compassion can increase limitlessly, then yes, anger could potentially increase limitlessly if someone has all sentient
beings. So the definition of increase limitlessly is that it applies to all sentient beings. So that means that potato chips can... Angry, you know. Yeah, you're using a term, but what does that term mean?
So I think the stable basis has to go back not to the clear knowing nature of the mind, but to the lack of superimposition with compassion versus anger. Anger has superimpositions and compassion genuine compassion or genuine love, as we define it in Buddhism, doesn't. That's how I think I would.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. But I think you also need to include the clear and cognizant nature of the mind in there. Because the compassion can't exist without the clear and cognizant nature of the mind.
Neither can anger.
Yeah, but neither can anger. So, but you have to have, you know, what you said, why anger can't increase limitlessly is because it's a wrong mind and there's an antidote to it. And any mind, because the thing that has the stable basis of the mind has to be something where you have clear and cognizance. Yeah. Yeah, there's the clear and cognizant nature of the mind, and there's no antidote that could cease the continuum of a similar type of that mind.
It's not rooted in ignorance.
It's not rooted in ignorance, yeah.
Maybe you could say it's not an adventitious mind. That's what makes an affliction vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
It's rooted in ignorance.
Right, but then you have to define adventitious. See, what I'm getting at is we're using a lot of terms, but if we don't know what the terms mean, even we might have a syllogism or a consequence that looks good, but we don't really understand what it means. That's what I'm getting at, yeah. So having the mind as a stable basis, I mean, it sounds good, but what in the world does that mean? Yeah, it has the mind as a stable basis. Yeah, what does stable basis mean? Yeah, what do you mean by mind? Do you mean clear and cognizance? Do you mean, yeah? This is really nice where you can just put things on the screen right away. This is very good.
This was the first one following Purdue's format that he had. So the defender says, I accept that the subject suffering is permanent. And the challenger says, then it follows that the subject, a headache, is permanent. Defender, why is a headache permanent? C, the challenger, because of being the suffering of pain, you asserted the pervasion that something that is suffering is permanent.
Headache permanent.
Can we look at the second? Look at the second one. This is after the defender says the reason is not established, and I used the same format, so it kind of leads into him, the defender saying that somewhere along the line. Defender, I accept that suffering has no causes. Challenger, it follows that the subject's suffering has no causes. Defender, I accept it. Challenger, then it would follow that the subject birth has no causes. Defender, why does birth have no causes? Challenger, because of being suffering, you asserted the pervasion being that suffering has no causes. Defender, the reason that birth is suffering is not established. And then the challenger says, it follows that birth is suffering because there is pain at the time of birth. And actually, I pulled out four other alternatives because there's five things listed in the Lam Rim under why under the suffering of birth. So it could also say it follows that birth is suffering because it possesses the negative tendencies, or birth is suffering because it is a source of suffering. Birth is suffering because it is the source of obscuring afflictions. And birth is suffering because it is an undesirable separation, meaning that it leads to death. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, what happens if somebody comes along and wants to argue? Yes, birth is suffering, but it's also happiness.
Yeah, why?
Why? Because parents are totally over the moon when they have a baby. For example, Prince Harry and Meghan. Yeah? For example, your parents.
There's no pervasion. There's no pervasion that just because parents are over the moon about something that it is not, that is not so, that is happiness.
Oh, but somebody would say, well, yes, it is. They say I'm happy. So isn't it happiness? Are you saying that they're lying?
Well, I guess it's a form of worldly happiness, but it's the suffering of change. Because, yeah, when I think about suffering, the first ones, we accept them as happiness.
Yeah, but why do you call it suffering if it's happiness?
Well, because it leads to all the other sufferings.
But no, look up the definition of suffering. If somebody's happy, they, you know, suffering is pain.
Okay, so we could use the word dukkha. That means, yeah.
What's the difference between dukkha and suffering?
Suffering is a subset of...
What?
Suffering is a subset of dukkha.
Okay. So whatever is dukkha is not necessarily suffering.
Not as defined by the use of the English term, yeah.
Okay.
So let me do the one that is, there is no pervasion. No, that the reason is not established. Let's do that one. I'm not sure it's right, but we can play. So the defender says, I accept that whatever sentient beings experience is random. Challenger, it follows that the subject sentient beings have random experiences. Defender, I accept. Challenger, then it would follow that the subject death is a random phenomenon. Defender, why is death a random phenomenon? Challenger, because the time of death is unknown, or maybe I would put in there random, I'm not sure. You asserted the pervasion. Defender, the reason that death is a random phenomena is not established. Challenger, it follows that the subject death is a cause phenomena because of being under the control of karma.
But how does that establish it as a random phenomena? Because we're saying that the reason death is a random phenomena is not established. So then you have to say death is a random phenomena. Because aren't you trying to establish that it's a random phenomenon?
No, the opposite.
Okay. Then you would say to him, give a reason why death is a random phenomenon. Yeah. You could say death is not a random phenomenon.
That's what the last one was trying to do.
No, but you would have to say death is not a random phenomena because it is a caused phenomena.
Oh, okay.
But then is something that is a caused phenomena not a random phenomena? What does random mean?
Without causes?
Hmm. Or does random mean it has causes, but we don't know when the causes are going to produce the result.
Mm.
Yeah. See, again, we're using words, and we've got to make sure that we all have the same definition of those words.
Okay. And the pervasion would be because death is experienced by sentient beings, right? Because whatever sentient beings experience is random, right? So when she asks, yeah, then it would follow that the subject death is random. Why? Because sentient beings experience it.
Yeah.
That's the pervasion.
Mm. Yeah. Because, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, then death is random. Yeah. Then realization is random because sentient beings experience it.
Random, made, done, happening, or chosen without method or conscious decision.
So what was the first part?
Made, done, happening, or chosen without method or conscious decision.
So it could be caused, but without conscious decision. So then an earthquake is random. And Dorian is Raman. Random. That definition doesn't strike me as very good.
With that definition, our birth and our death are random because we don't consciously choose those causes and conditions to come together.
Then most of the things that happen to us are random.
Right, because we're under the power of those causes and conditions. They're not under our power at this point.
Yeah, but you could make an argument that they're not random because they're under the control of karma afflictions.
With a better definition of random. I was going to say that if you change the part that's highlighted there, then you would have to change the next two lines.
Which part is highlighted?
She just unhighlighted it when I said that. I see you how you are.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. If you change that to reflect that the answer to that would have to be because it is what sentient beings experience, then the next line is the reason that death is something that sentient beings' experience is not established, and it would have to go from there.
This is based on when the defender says the pervasion is opposite, and there were two scenarios. So in the first one, the challenger says, it follows that the subject, a cat, is an animal because of being a feline. And then the defender says the pervasion is opposite, which is false. And that means whatever is a feline is necessarily not an animal. So then the challenger tries to correct them in their response, and they say it follows that it is not the case that whatever is a feline is necessarily not an animal, because there is a common locus of the two, animal and feline, because Maitri is that.
it's a very odd way of saying it, but that's how the book phrased it. And then the second one, the challenger says, it follows that the subject of Buddha is an Arya being because of having a direct realization of emptiness. Then the defender says, the pervasion is opposite, which is not true. Then the challenger says, it follows that whoever has a direct realization of emptiness is necessarily not an Arya. Defender says, I accept it. Then challenger says, well, give a reason justifying that whoever has a direct realization of emptiness is necessarily not an Arya. So then the defender has to make up some wacky reason. And they say, because an Arya is necessarily a bodhisattva, and whoever has a direct realization of emptiness is not necessarily a bodhisattva.
Okay. And so then you would have to, how would you continue this?
You could say it follows that a hearer on the path of seeing is a bodhisattva because they're an Arya. Mm-hmm. And they would say, why? Or I accept it. And then you could say, it follows that that's not the case. Give an example of a hearer on the path of seeing who is a bodhisattva. And they say, well...
Can you give an example of a hearer on the path of seeing who is a bodhisattva? If somebody's a hearer, can they also be a bodhisattva?
No.
Why not? What about somebody who became an arhat on the hearer path and then generated bodhicitta and entered the Mahayana path of accumulation?
They're no longer a hearer at that point. They're bodhisattva.
Yeah, they're no longer a hearer. Yeah.
Can you be a bodhisattva who is manifesting as a hearer to encourage people to enter the bodhisattva path?
Oh, that's a good, yeah. Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. But then is that person actually a hearer? Okay. Do you want to do this again next week? Is this helpful? Yeah, because this whole bit is actually quite challenging, isn't it? I mean, what came before, we kind of mastered okay, and now we're putting it all together, and it's harder, okay? So, so for next week, yeah, everybody, again, do all five, examples of all five. Okay, and try and also think of someone's, where maybe you have some doubt or you're trying to figure something out, and play both sides of it and see what happens. Okay, so we have a little bit of time left. So you're going to put all these in one file, right? Okay, good. I don't think I read, number four and number five. So after the defender says there is no pervasion. No, we did that. After the defender says the pervasion is opposite. Mm-hmm. Control folder access blocked. No, it disappeared. When the defender answers that the pervasion is opposite, meaning that whatever is that three is necessarily not that two, here too the challenger may go on to justify why that pervasion was put forth, or the challenger may ask the defendant to justify why he or she gave that answer. So Because those two options keep coming again and again for all these. So it's good to remember them. In other words, you either justify your idea or you throw it back to them. Okay. So the first approach, which is just the challenger justifying why that privation was put forth, goes, the challenger says, it follows that the subject, uncomposed space, is a hidden phenomena because of being a conventional truth. Okay. So the defender says the privation is opposite. That is, whatever is a conventional truth is necessarily not a hidden phenomena. I have such a problem thinking in Svatantrika terms. I have to pause here and think, what are they saying? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to say space. It is a conventional phenomena. It's a conventional phenomena. Okay. So the privation is opposite. That is, whatever is a conventional phenomena is necessarily not a hidden phenomena. And then the defender said the privation is opposite. Okay. In other words, whatever is a conventional truth is necessarily not a hidden phenomena. That's not correct. Okay. Then the challenger says, it follows that it is not the case that whatever is a conventional truth is necessarily not a hidden phenomena because there is a common locus of conventional truth and hidden phenomena because nirvana is that and definition is that. So is that correct? Yeah. Truth. Okay. Yeah. And hidden phenomena includes both all phenomena. Yeah. Okay. Both ultimate and conventional truths. So here too, the other way the challenger can go is to try to get the defender to justify the answer. For instance, it follows that the subject, uncomposed space, is a hidden phenomena because of being a conventional truth. And defender says the privation is opposite. Challenger says it follows that whatever is a conventional truth is necessarily not a hidden phenomena. Defender says, I accept it. Challenger, give a reason justifying that whatever is a conventional truth is necessarily not a hidden phenomena. Defender, because whatever is a conventional truth is necessarily a non-existent, and whatever is a hidden phenomena is necessarily inexistent. Of course, the defender's attempted justification makes no sense, but it serves to demonstrate another possible way to try to justify a privation. Yeah? So we have to be astute, you know, because somebody may say something incorrect when we ask them to prove something. Okay. Then after the defender says, I accept it, the main thing that determines the way this will go is whether the defender is accepting something that has just come up or something that was earlier denied. Starting with what the defender says, what the challenger says, if the defender is accepting something that has just come up, it might go like this. It follows that the subject sound is a permanent phenomena because of being a product. Defender says, I accept it. Challenger says, who is your teacher teaching you that rubbish? Okay. The challenger says, it follows that the subject sound is not a permanent phenomena because of being a momentary phenomena. And then maybe the person is a Hindu and they say, no, you know, sound is a permanent phenomena because there exists a common locus, and the sound of the Vedas is that common locus. then what are you going to do? How are you going to debate with that Hindu who says that? You have to say the sound of the Vedas is not a permanent phenomena because it's an impermanent phenomena. And they go, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, what do you do when you come up with somebody, up against somebody, and you give a good reason, and you even backtrack and, you know, say why the sound of the vid is an impermanent phenomenon, and you give a good reason for that, and they don't accept it? Huh? Mm-hmm. So what would you give the consequences?
I would like to say something like, it follows that they're asserting that the sound of the Vedas are permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to say something. It follows that the sound of the Vedas are being heard right now. And, you know, because they're permanent, they'd have to be happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we should be hearing them right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that. And so, as you are saying, it follows that you're hearing the sound of the Vedas right now. And they go, I'm not hearing the sound of the Vedas right
yeah.
now. Oh, you know, you just,
yeah.
something that doesn't work.
Okay. So you just say it follows that we're hearing the sound of the Vedas right now because the sound of the Vedas is permanent. I don't know. I haven't studied their thing. Yeah. Yeah, no, they would say, they might say that it's just kind of there, always an eternal sound.
Yeah, John Boucher.
And you have to tune into it.
I'll have to look it up. John Boucher has this in his book. Mm. They have some way of kind of backtracking and trying to explain this that somewhat is more sensible.
Okay.
But I'd have to see if I could find
it. Yeah, see if you could find it, because it would be very interesting to hear how they defend that. Okay, so here the challenger simply contradicts the defender's acceptance, denies the wrong thing that the defender has agreed to, and offers a reason that the answer was wrong. However, bear in mind that the challenger is not bound to lay it all out for the defender. That is, what the challenger says may or may not be reliable. It might be a ruse. It is up to the defender to see what is going on. Okay, so the challenger, the defender should always try and be truthful according to what they believe. The challenger doesn't have that burden. Okay. At this point, after the challenger's full argument in response to the acceptance, the defender has the usual choice of four answers to give to this consequence, and it will go from there. So then, if the defender accepts something earlier denied, it may go like this. Challenger, it follows that the subject's sound is not a permanent phenomena because of being a product. Defender, I accept. Challenger, tha! Whammo, you jerk! It follows that the subject's sound is not a permanent phenomena. Defender, I accept it. Challenger, give a reason justifying that the subject's sound is not a permanent phenomena because of being a functioning thing. So note well, please bear in mind that the Buddhist debate is not like an assembly line. The direction the debate will go is certainly not predetermined, and there are choices at every turn. Basically, the challenger has two directions in which he or she can go, either presenting an argument against the defender's last answer or asking the defender to give some proof justifying that last answer. Okay, so I think we can stop here for tonight. Is everybody's brain frazzled? Okay. So it's also good when doing this to watch our own reactions. And if we say something that doesn't make sense, does the self-centeredness come up? Does the self-grasping come up? I said the wrong thing. Oh, this is terrible. What are people going to think of me? They think I'm an idiot. Oh, I just made a jerk out of myself. You know, to watch this. Yeah, because I think that's part of the whole thing of doing a debate. It's not just winning a debate, and it's certainly not just winning the debate, and it's not just laying out the profound, debate format. It's checking what's going on in your mind, when you say something and go, saw. Or, when somebody says sa to you, is it like, well, actually, you're wrong. I just can't think of why now. And then we get defensive. Okay. So it's quite interesting. It's a very good opportunity to watch our habitual afflictive responses to things. And I think the debate teachers often, at least in the Tibetan community, they'll point that out.